The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
By your command.
Felt a great disturbance in the Force.
Resistance is futile.
Who built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Exterminate!
Silent Breed is people!
I'll be back.
That sounds like something out of science fiction.
We live in a spaceship, dear.
Hear ye, hear ye. I'm Dave Nelson, and on the 17th day of December 2014, I call to order this, the 34th meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club from GalacticNetcasts.com. And let's all get on our membership pins, give the secret handshake to one another, and get the show on the road. Our guest geek this week is one of the people behind the website WarpedSpaceSciFi.com. It is a free science fiction outlet and content provider featuring sci-fi news, posts, blogs, reviews, and other original content. They also feature and promote many indie sci-fi projects that run on YouTube. They actually have a collection of these sci-fi projects on their YouTube channel as well. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Captain Zant. Welcome to the show.
Woohoo!
Hey, well, thanks for having me. I'm a fan, and I'm glad to be on.
All right, you need some fanfare, so here you go. Stand by. Here you go. That's your fanfare.
That's far more than I get at home.
All right. Of course, joining you are our co-hosts, my co-hosts, Brad Ludwig, Anessa Moyens, and Matt Stein. How are you guys doing?
Pretty darn good.
Yeah, doing good. Much better than last week.
Yeah, you were out for the count last week. Anessa had a week's worth of headaches. Not Brad either. Not that headache.
Not this time.
No, this was, something totally different. Yeah, it was headaches and, severe exhaustion, and I think I ended up also with a mild case of food poisoning at the beginning of it
all. Wow, triple whammy.
Yeah, it just, when it rains, it pours.
From what I read on the social networks, you have car problems too, so that kind
of sucks. Well, I got my car out of the shop last week, and that was $1,400 almost.
Wow.
And then my car went back in the shop today because the thermostat and one of the sensors decided to derp. So that was another $160. So
yikes.
My retirement money going to good use, I suppose.
All right. On to more brighter subjects or topics. Let's do the hypothetical question of the week. Since this is our last episode before Christmas and the new year, each of you tell us what your ultimate sci-fi gift would be and what your sci-fi wish would be for 2015. So let's start with Brad Ludwig.
Oh, ultimate sci-fi gift?
Yes.
Boy, the Guardian of Forever.
Oh, yeah, from Star Trek. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to hop through time. Mm-hmm. Big time window. You'd be able to see events as they happened and get a great understanding and actual view of human history. That would be a really kind of a kick-ass gift.
And a really cool voice, too.
Yes, absolutely. Narrated with a booming voice.
No doubt.
Sci-fi wish. What do you mean by sci-fi wish?
I don't know.
I'm a little confused.
I don't know. Do you want a certain show to be successful, or do you want something that you've been waiting for a while to finally come out, or something like that?
Okay, my sci-fi wish then would be spin-off of a Firestorm television show.
Firestorm or Firefly?
Firestorm.
Firestorm.
What's Firestorm?
Firestorm is Ronnie Raymond. He is, if you've been watching The Flash television program.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, my brain wasn't there at all.
He's the guy that bursts into flames.
Yes.
Okay.
He bursts into flames, and there's a whole story as to why he's doing that, and there's a whole interesting mechanic to his power that would lend to pretty good drama, and I think that you could definitely make I think that there's definitely strong potential to make a show. And that would be really kind of interesting to see the success of Arrow spinning things off and building a DC television universe. I think that would be wonderful success for.
Plus, the actor who plays Firestorm is the cousin of the actor who plays Arrow, so it would stay in the family too.
Yes, Robbie Amell is Stephen Amell's cousin. Yes, absolutely.
And they're Canadians.
And they look a lot alike.
All right, Anessa.
Yes, they are. Robbie Amell was in Tomorrow People or something like that that was canceled not too long ago.
Yep,
so
yep.
It'd be good to see him working on a regular gig again.
All right, Anessa, it's your turn. Sci-fi gift and sci-fi wish for 2015.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be teleportation, but a way to travel far distances in a super short amount of time rather than an all-day affair to get across the country.
Because you'd like to visit your family very easily.
Yes.
Okay. Sci-fi wish.
That would be the best gift ever.
Okay, what would be the wish for 2015?
Yeah, I really don't know. Like, what I would want it to be for 15, aside from someone coming up with this technology in 2015.
Okay, all right. So you don't want to...
Someone make it happen. Someone smarter than me.
So you don't want, like, a certain movie sequel to come out finally or something along those lines?
Not particularly. I mean, I'm looking forward to some sequels, but they're not, like, mission critical, I guess.
Okay, you know what? Let's change the wording a little bit, okay? Something sci-fi related that you're looking forward to in 2015. That makes it a lot easier. So, all right, let's move on to Matt. Your sci-fi gift for 2014, your Christmas gift, and your sci-fi hopes and dreams for 2015.
I want a Stargate for Christmas.
Ooh.
And I don't want to talk or hear about Doctor Who anymore.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Yes. Poor Matt.
Yeah, not going to happen.
I'm serious. I don't ever want to hear about Doctor Who again.
Yeah.
No.
I was telling someone about how much you guys talk Doctor Who and how I just shut off. And he's like, pick any Doctor Who that isn't the popular one and just say, that's the best Doctor, and then argue that point forever.
Without even knowing the facts? Just kind of wing it.
Because I think it would piss a bunch of you guys off. You guys being Doctor
Who. Bowling.
Well, I wouldn't get pissed off if your doctor was somebody else. I mean, mine's Christopher Eccleston.
You wouldn't, but someone would.
Maybe Dave.
Yeah.
Maybe Dave.
You know, because Tenet's fighting words in my world. No, kidding. I'm kidding. All right, so finally, Captain Zant, we want to hear your Christmas, your sci-fi gift for the holidays 2014. And what you're looking forward to as far as sci-fi goes in 2015.
Okay. You're going to hate this. My gift? I want the TARDIS.
Take that, Matthew.
Sorry, Matt.
Yeah, that would probably solve my travel dilemma, is the TARDIS. That's a brilliant idea.
Someone would have said it before me. And what I'd like to see next year is just for our website to survive to see its third year. So.
Oh, wow, it's been around...
We just crossed into our second year, so next year we would have crossed over into our third year, you know, so see what I'm saying? I want to just keep surviving through next year with the website, you know.
Oh, so far so good. You're on year number two.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, just keep pushing and things happen.
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, great, great job, guys. Thank you for those great answers. Let's move on to Sci-Fi Bites. These are quick stories, some headlines from the week's sci-fi news. Let's kick things off with a brand new show on Channel 4 in Britain. A new British show will feature a space arc piloted by an android bear. Yes, I said an android
bear. I'm
sorry,
that's just really funny.
It just sounds cute and cuddly.
So perfectly British. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is totally British.
I'm looking forward to that one.
So
that article looked really interesting. I had fun with that. And, you know, what they've done before with Red Dwarf and the other show, I can't remember, with the fat idiot captain, but they were just...
Oh, Hyperdrive.
Hyperdrive.
Yeah, Hyperdrive, thanks, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, those two, I just loved them. Forever. So if they come off with something that's got a similar kind of sense to it, even though I know it's Channel 4, it's not BBC, but you know, if the writing comes off anywhere near like that and the acting, I'd just be over the moon. I love it.
this has that vibe, definitely. So the story is, it's a half-hour comedy science fiction, that follows 200 humans on a mission to find a new home after the destruction of Earth. The ship has the finest minds from the Earth, plus an inept crew and an android bear pilot. And then there's one guy who won the lottery. So there's all these like really smart people. Perfect. And the crew, and then one guy who won the chance to be on this ship. It sounds, the premise sounds really funny.
You can't go wrong with an android bear.
All right, let's talk Walking Dead. The spinoff series setting has been revealed, and it will take place in Los Angeles. Los Angeles.
How about somewhere else that's not a usual location for shows?
Not as predictable.
Well, you have to admit that it's got some interesting possibilities. I mean, of course, they're going to have the Hollywood sign in, you know, because they're going to have an opening very much like, I'm sure, the original Walking Dead, right? So can you guys picture the Hollywood sign in that opening?
I can, but the thing is you end up with all of these, like, catastrophic events, alien invasions, Armageddon-type things happening in places, happening in LA, and it would be nice to just, you know, I don't know, go to some other city, even if they go to like Portland or Seattle or, I don't know, Boise, Idaho, for all I care.
Yeah, that's a good point, because there's a lot of good West Coast locations for sci-fi.
Yeah, I mean, they could totally go somewhere else.
So that's a good point, you know. And I'd agree.
I'm not really down with LA.
You know, I was
down with Georgia because, I mean, you know, Atlanta, yeah, it gets some, but not nearly as much as L.A. and New York. And I like the idea that, you know, they try to go to Atlanta and then they're just kind of like backwoods Georgia, which is cool. But, LA. Wait,
Captain Zant, you said you were born in Los Angeles?
Yeah, but moved up to the Bay when I was like 6 months old, so it doesn't really
Okay.
I understand how that goes.
You know what would be really interesting if they had it in a northern climate location? Because then you'd have to deal with the winter. You know, what happens to
like,
the...
Yeah, and that was the other thing, too, is thinking, like, what if they shot it even in the New England states, if they did it somewhere in, like, Vermont or New Hampshire or something? It's still a heavily wooded area, so you're going to get a lot of cover from the zombies, and the zombies are going to hide from you, but they're also going to have to deal with winter more so than in Georgia. Definitely be interesting. And that was something that kind of bothered me about the show versus the comic, is that they don't really touch on winter very much on the show.
No, and it does get cold in Georgia. So it's not like it doesn't
it
get
does.
Cold.
And they do have some snow, not like a ton, but they do have some. And the comic book acknowledges that. You do see a change of season, and you don't really get that as much on the TV show. And that was just something that always kind of bothered me. Like, it was always hot or maybe somewhat chilly, but not freezing.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. I'm surprised they'd pass up the chance to splash all that red blood against some white snow. You know?
That would look awesome.
They at least have a couple of episodes like, oh, we got a snow.
Yeah, that would look cool.
Extra gore factor.
Two really important cool points to point out is Robert Kirkman is involved in writing this show, which is awesome, and it'll take place a little bit earlier than the current Walking Dead, to show more of how it all happened, which I'm sure a lot of people are curious about. I mean, I've been curious about that from the very start, because they don't really touch on it too much. You just see the aftermath. You really don't see it, you know, first starting.
Right.
Yeah.
They could bring me back into it, because last season, like, I just started fading out. I was like, oh, okay, I've had enough zombies now, you know. But if they did a good prequel like that, that got more back to, you know, an interesting storyline, something a little deeper, an overarching storyline or something, that would draw me back in probably to watch again.
Yeah, I haven't really watched it much this season. I know of what's happened somewhat, but yeah, I'm not as motivated to look up the episodes I've missed this season.
Well, they say the second part of this season is going to be crazy, like the most over the top that the series has ever been. So maybe it's a good time to get back into it, Anessa.
Maybe. We'll see.
All right. So, of course, information revealed from the Sony hack continues. And a couple of very interesting pieces of information. They actually had the inside on other studios' properties. And according to the latest information, there's going to be an X-Men Fantastic Four crossover, or there might be. It's according to emails going back and forth between a couple of Sony execs and a guy by the name of Michael DeLuca. He appears to have his ear to the ground when it comes to Sony's competitors. And one of the competitors, of course, is 20th Century Fox, or Fox. And they've got the whole X-Men and Fantastic Four. And it sounds like they're getting into the crossover game by maybe having a film where the X-Men and the Fantastic Four are both involved. So that could be a very interesting turn of events. Brad, please vent. Vent away.
Sai says a million words.
It's Singer did something really brilliant with this new film and the plans for Age of Apocalypse. It'll be interesting to see how they would be able to pull off that whole thing, especially with the X-Men. I mean, really, it seems like of all the people that are X-Men cast members, Hugh Jackman's definitely up to play Wolverine. So that's almost a given that he would appear in something like that. But anybody else, Halle Berry, good luck. Anna Paquin, maybe. Sean Ashmore, you're going to be hard-pressed to get the X-Men that you would probably want to have be in a Fantastic Four crossover.
Maybe it's not the X-Men you want, but it's the X-Men you need.
I walked right into that, didn't I? So, anyways, yeah. And they have done in comics a number of crossovers between the X-Men and Fantastic Four, and quite honestly, the only one that was worth a damn was the one done in the 80s. And it was at a point where it happened after the Marvel Mutant Massacre and Shadowcat, Kitty Pryde, she has the ability to, you know, become incorporeal, but she had her powers kind of damaged and she was stuck being incorporeal and was slowly fading out. And so the X-Men approach Reed Richards to say, hey, we've got a serious situation here. You need to help us. And Reed tries to figure it out, and he can't, and he realizes that he needs the help of Dr. Doom. As cheesy and as horrible as that sounds, the execution and the writing on it was really kind of brilliant and helped tie some interesting things together in the Marvel Universe. That said, looking at how they've handled the Fantastic Four properties and the Brett Ratner X3 movie, I really don't see them, unless they hire an exceptional director like a Joss Whedon, I don't see them pulling that off well.
Well, Doom's going to be in this new Fantastic Four, so maybe they plan on doing the Fantastic Four, the new film, and then they do X-Men Apocalypse, and then it's the team-up movie after that.
You know, the big thing that they're doing with this Fantastic Four film is everybody's younger. I really don't see the veteran cast of the X-Men coming to hang out with kids to fix a problem or just to work together.
Well, this is all hearsay. I mean, this is just one guy hearing something from another studio. It's just a rumor, and who knows what's going to happen. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past him just because of, I mean, everybody's on this, you know, superhero comic book, you know, bandwagon, teaming up and crossing over and all this stuff. So, yeah, it's not without the possibility of it happening.
Yeah, I don't know. Be interesting.
Anybody else want to weigh in on this?
I'm not big with the comics movies and the Marvel franchise. I mean, it's huge and all that. If they made like sci-fi films, you know, if there was a sci-fi equivalent to it, you know, I'd be all over this topic. But no, not really. The one thing I would say is I really wish Joss Whedon would come back to us on the sci-fi side of things.
Well,
I think once he's done with, I don't know how long his contract is, but I'm sure he'll be itching to spread his wings and do something else. Because the amount of studio clout that he'll have if he pulls off the next, you know, few Marvel films, he'll be able to write his ticket anywhere and do anything he wants to.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's got to have this great backlog of stories and ideas ready to go, you know. And he's so clever. Like, each time he put out a show, I thought it was better and better. And, like, when, you know, last sci-fi he really did, which was Dollhouse, that was some deep staccato. That was a great story, really well done. Say, like, second season, or, you know, at the end when they tried to wrap it up, they're a little rushed, and it feels that way. But overall, I mean, yeah, I'd love to see him come back, because he has these just fantastic ideas, and you know he's got this shit in his drawer that you just want to see him pull out, you know, and pitch and, you know, get on TV or in the theaters or something. Back to sci-fi, though, for me.
Well, Captain Zant, I know that you're a fan of Star Trek. Did you see Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, actually, I just watched that a few days ago.
Okay, well, that's the perfect tie-in to this final story in the Sci-Fi Bites. How Guardians of the Galaxy led to possible changes for Star Trek III. Sounds like the Guardians of the Galaxy was a very disruptive force in Hollywood. At least according to Badass Digest, they recently revealed in a new article, this may be one of the main reasons why Roberto Orci was relieved of his directing gig for the upcoming Star Trek III. Paramount was demanding Star Trek III to feel more like Guardians. And it seems that Orci didn't agree with that, so he was taken off the project as director. Paramount wants the third film to be huge. They look at Rocket and Groot from Guardians, and they look at Scotty's alien sidekick, Keenzer, and they wonder why he doesn't have more of a role in these movies. So they're saying that that's one of the reasons why Roberto Orci left as director, because he didn't want to turn Star Trek III into a Guardians of the Galaxy and make it all about the cute little alien.
Yeah, and I read that article, and I do have one part where I disagree with the author at the end, where she kind of thinks he should have stuck it out, but I say good for him. You know, if you think it's going to hurt the integrity of Star Trek, as, you know, not just the franchise, but as a whole, you know, as it's the entity it is, then, yeah, bail out, you know, and go with the hashtag bring in Riker.
You know what people don't understand about Star Trek is it's not like fast-paced adventure like Star Wars or a Guardians of the Galaxy. It's very much like more of a like a concept. That's why it works.
Trek's always been very cerebral.
Yeah,
you know?
That's why it works better on TV.
Absolutely.
That's why it works better on TV.
I think that he should have stayed and argued his point more.
All right, stand his ground.
I bet he argued till he was blue in the face is the thing. You know, that's quite an opportunity he's backed away from, and it would have been his first real directing gig. And, you know, coming in behind Abrams, I mean, you know, there's a...
Yeah.
I really think he really had to have felt strongly, and he probably really did argue his case. Now, of course, I don't know, but I would just presume.
Yeah.
But
all right.
I don't know.
It's too bad, because it's part of what's been happening to the big franchises. Like, Star Trek is, you know, since the whole CBS and Bad Robot thing, it started to really slide downhill as far as its integrity to me. And then the same kind of problems been going on with Star Wars already before the first one's even been released, with like the Disneyfication of it all. You know, I mean, you look around on websites and they've got Disney characters as, you know, Star Wars characters and this and that. Things like that I really hate to see touch a big, solid, you know, epic, you know, entity like either of those two, but that's really been the trend. You know, they want these big box office hits. And, you know, damn be integrity, damn be the tradition of the stories. You know, just let's go ahead and make some money.
Yeah.
I think Paramount wants to make something huge, especially for the 50th anniversary. So I think
they never should have given up as many rights as they did, you know, truly. They wanted that much control.
Yeah.
They gave over too much to Bad Robot and JJ, in my opinion.
Okay. No, valid point. Very, very valid point. Brad, what's your thoughts on this?
What they needed to do with Guardians of the Galaxy was to do more world building to the extent of, you know, doing outer space and creating increasing the size of the sandbox and equating that to Star Trek III is exactly. complete and utter crap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It doesn't make it.
Doing more and more franchise building really is what that is, and trying to emulate that is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not Marvel. Don't try and be Marvel.
And seeing like Universal is now like trying to make a monster universe. Well, maybe, but don't. That was a decision for Marvel and now Disney to make to, because they've got a huge amount of comic books that they're, I mean, it makes sense that they all relate. Mm-hmm. That makes sense for that brand, for that product, and for what they're trying to do. Star Trek is an entirely different creature, just as, you know, Star Wars is a different creature. I mean, you should do what's right for the tone and the product that you have, and not try to duplicate. Trying to duplicate somebody else's success is a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, you want to take away lessons from how people made their success, but to copy what somebody else does mm-hmm. is a disservice to you. It's a disservice to the people that work for you. Because you're stating essentially that their ideas aren't good enough, or that you can't make this success yourselves while learning from the mistakes of others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I've never understood copying somebody else's formula.
You're an idiot.
We talked about this on a previous episode, how Paramount and CBS have the franchise already. For 2016, I want to see them making a TV show. I want to see them making a movie. I want to see them doing online stuff. They could be doing all this stuff for the big anniversary in 2016, but they're not. It doesn't sound sounds like they're putting out a movie and that's it. And they should be doing more than that.
Yeah.
At least that's my opinion.
I agree, and I hear you. And this move away from television was tragic. Unfortunately, the move back in will be epically expensive per episode. Ergo, really, the reason so many of us Trek fans have really just started going to the indie Trek.
Mm-hmm.
The stories are fantastic. Like Phase 2, also known as New Voyages, and Star Trek Continues, they have production quality that is like, you'd think you were watching an original episode on TV.
Yeah, no.
You know, they're that good. And Farragut's also very good. There's just, you know, a bunch of them out there anymore. And they're doing exactly what Trek fans have been screaming for. Go indie Trek is the way, really, anymore. If you do want to see some good stuff, that's because I got frustrated too. I mean, and you wait 2 years. It's 2 years for a Trek film, you know. You wait and you wait. So if you get a bad one, like to me, last one really was a letdown. I was like, seriously, I waited this long to see this. God damn it, you know. And in the meantime, all these independent Trek shows have been giving me some great content, some great story. They use old writers from the old series, the original and on. They're deep into the Star Trek family. There's a lot of true Trek to be had there. Basically, yeah. That's my advice anymore. If you really want Trek, go there, because Paramount and CBS, Bad Robot, they're going to let you down.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the advice, Captain Zant. Appreciate that.
Sorry.
No, that's cool.
Kind of hit a nerve.
All right, let's get into our discussion stories and staying on the subject of bad and good movies. Matt, what's your first story there?
They have released the top 10 best and worst sci-fi and fantasy movies of 2014.
Who's they? Who's they, Matt?
The internet, Dave. Who else?
Okay. I'm going to say the internet.
The internet.
The story was on IO9, and I don't think it was any like credible source. There's just some people, which is fine because they're usually the smartest ones. And when I saw the list, I kind of agreed with the way it panned out. So let's just go ahead and assume that this person knows what they're talking about. And no one lies on the internet.
No one ever
Everything's
does.
Everything's true.
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do the top 10 best real quick. Number 10 is Edge of Tomorrow, which, Dave, you saw, correct?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's one of my favorite.
That was a really good movie.
Yeah, one of my favorite films of 2014.
See, and I probably should preface this with, I have seen one of these movies. I have a bunch of the other ones still to watch. I just don't have any time. Correction, I've seen two. I've seen the Lego movie, which ends up on here. But
spoiler alert! Thanks.
Wow.
That's because everything is awesome.
Yeah, I remember that part.
I love it. cool when you're part of a list.
Just let me know when you're done. Go ahead, sing.
Yeah, go ahead. Continue.
I'm good.
Number 9 is Tale of Princess Kaguya.
I have not seen that.
It looked Japanese.
That sounds like a porn.
I like the title alone.
I was typing it out and I'm like, what in the hell? And I just moved on because I didn't want to know.
It's a cool name.
It's almost as awesome as number 8, The Babadook.
The Babadook? Who's the Babadook? The Babadook.
That sounds like something a baby does in his diaper.
Oh, honey, the baby did a Babadook
like
again.
A kid that can't say Marmaduke.
I like the poop one better.
The Boondocks.
Well, there you go. Number 7 is Captain America Winter Soldier, which I know we've talked about a lot.
Yep.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Number 6 is some movie called The One I Love. Number 5 sounds like a winter-themed adult movie, Snowpiercer.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah,
you guys,
it's on my list to watch.
Oh, you guys
really
have to see it. It's so good. It stars Chris Evans, who is Captain America, but with a beard. So it's really weird to see him without that clean-cut look of Captain America. And he's awesome in it. I highly recommend it. It's based on actually
a book.
Yeah, a French graphic novel series, I believe.
Wow. Interesting. Number 4
Surprise.
Is Only Lovers Left Alive. I actually think this is a biopic about Brad and I.
It's true.
Number 3, cue the singing, Anessa.
Everything is awesome.
Number 3 is the Lego movie. Number 2, some weird movie called Under the Skin, which I'm guessing Dave's going to tell me is awesome now.
Scarlett Johansson naked. Why you haven't watched that already? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, she is naked in the movie, but I wouldn't say it's the best of 2014.
It's number 1. Guardians of the Galaxy was the best movie of 2014.
Yeah, I agree.
I wouldn't even put Under the Skin that high, though. And what's funny was, like, a lot of the critics really loved Under the Skin, but just casual viewers were just like, it's all right. And that's where I stand is, it's all right.
Well, I feel like, you know, there was only one Schwarzenegger movie this year, and it was actually really bad. Escape Plan is a terrible crap heap of garbage, steamy garbage. So you really got to fill it in when Arnold's not pumping out the jams.
You know,
I do have to ask, totally not related to sci-fi, but related to Arnold. Did you ever watch The Last Stand?
Yes.
Is that any good?
It's acceptable because a lot of stuff gets blown up and people get shot.
Okay.
And that was his first.
That's what I was wondering.
That was his first film back after leaving the governorship, right?
Yeah,
I believe so. Last I saw was a View Instant on Netflix, and I want to say they're making another one, a sequel.
Yeah, because it's on my queue on
the second to the Last Stand.
The very last stand.
And we mean it. We mean it this time.
Yeah, I'd recommend seeing it. It's at worst you're gonna lose an hour and a half, which you could lose an hour and a half doing much worse.
I'll make sure I crochet during the process.
Arnie's gonna be in the new Terminator Genesis, right?
Oh, you bet your sweet titsy is.
Yeah. Captain Zant, we should have clarified up the top of the show, and Matt, you should have like a lower third under your video at all times.
Like iHeart,
World's biggest Arnold Schwarzenegger fan. So anytime he gets a chance to actually bring up Arnold Schwarzenegger, he will.
I'm just going to start rubbing my nipples. So myself and two friends are going to the Arnold Classic in Ohio in March. It's like a weightlifting competition or something.
Oh, that's right.
And I had to send him a check because he paid for our hotel room. And in the notes, I just wrote, yeah! I got a kick out of it when my bank sent me like a copy of him cashing the check. And I'm like, I love
that's
you, Arnold.
Funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways. Moving on to the worst movies. I didn't know this movie existed, but there was a movie called The Legends of Oz, which looked like an animated Oz-type movie.
That's not the live action with James Franco, is it? That was a different one.
No, that was... what was that? It wasn't Return to Oz.
He went to Oz to kill the leader of North Korea. That's
it,
right?
Ooh, I forgot to bring this up before. Sony officially yanked the interview.
Yeah, yeah.
They were like teetering on it, and I saw right before we started that they asked. Yeah, they said they're not doing it.
I think that's
just lame.
I think it's going to be released eventually, but not on the original release date.
Yeah, North Korea threatened to blow up movie theaters, so movie theaters started saying they weren't going to show it anymore.
I can't blame them. It's not like you're talking about a hugely important movie or something either. You're going to take a stand and play this movie, you know?
So this movie's Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return, excuse me.
It was an animated film, like a 3D animated film, and not so much.
Not so much.
Yeah, I don't think I've even heard of that one.
Oh, it looked like garbage.
You and the rest of the internets.
Number 9, The Giver. Wasn't that a book?
Yeah,
but poorly executed.
Yeah, it was a book that people were really anticipating, and they had high hopes for it, and it turned out to be a piece of crap.
Well, I think every high school, middle school kid in the world has had to read The Giver. I don't remember what it's
about. You have to read The Giver.
Jeff Bridges actually did this movie. He self-funded and shot a little bit with his father while Lloyd Bridges was still alive.
Huh. Yeah, it was his. So he tried to produce it. He like spent years and years trying to get this thing produced, right?
Yeah, and in an interview, after this new movie was done, he's like, well, you know, it was one of those things where if I was going to get it made, I had to make compromises and you know, give up some things to get this finally made. And he ended up playing the character that his father played in the short sort of thing that he had put together originally. And, it didn't do well at all.
Yeah, it fell flat.
And this kind of goes back to us talking about trying to duplicate other people's success. People want to make the next Harry Potter. Yeah. You know,
to me, it felt like they were really trying to emulate that film, World of Amber.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it's a post-apocalyptic and living underground, and children are assigned their duties upon coming of age and such like that. But it had a lot of that kind of. It was filmed in the same kind of way with that kind of ambiance and a bit of spectacular in there, fantasy, sci-fi, kind of really great visually, but at least it definitely had the storyline to carry it off. It's a very good film. But it just felt to me like The Giver was trying to knock off a lot of elements from that.
And every other post-apocalyptic film that's come out in the last 3 years.
Yeah, well, because in the previews, it kind of gave a vibe from Equilibrium to the way that it was done. And the having to take something in order to not feel emotions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It had that same vibe, like, oh man, things are looking different now, and look at all this color and feels.
Yeah, and even that, I remember even the reboot of The Outer Limits in the 80s doing damn near that same story.
Yeah.
They did it extremely well, of course. That was a good show. That was a very good reboot.
Hey, Matt, let's just skim the rest of this list, the ones that we really want to talk about.
Yeah, that works. 8, Maleficent. I haven't seen it. I'm supposed to see it now. I don't know if I want to see it.
You know, I really enjoyed Maleficent, and I don't think it should be part of the worst list.
A lot of the complaints were they changed the character to become kind of dependent on a... She was a lot stronger in the original story than she turned out to be in this movie. She was kind of a... She was spiteful, right? Because of a man?
Yeah, she was kind of on the spiteful side of things, but she learned her lesson.
Okay.
And she was like, I don't need no man.
Okay.
And all was well.
All right.
Number 7 is The Legend of Hercules, not to be confused with the Hercules movies starring The Rock. 6 is Winter's Tale. 5, Exodus, Gods and Kings. I think I saw a commercial for it. Don't know.
Yeah, I hear nothing but bad things about that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. 4 is the new Transformers, which I've also not heard a single good thing about.
Well, it's Mark Wahlberg.
I heard it was a big, long commercial. So, or whatever.
I enjoy Mark Wahlberg to an extent, but...
I like him better behind the camera, you know, like... what he did with Boardwalk Empire, his involvement with that was pretty good. So
say hi to your mother from me.
That's all I ever think about. "So your dog, what's that like? Say hi to your mother for me."
And you can't not hear you can't not hear that in his voice when you hear him talk now. It's just it drives you crazy.
Number three is the actual Hercules movie starring The Rock.
That's
which,
a shame.
Well, other than the fact that he looks stacked as all get up, I don't think there's any reason to see that movie. Number two is Transcendence, which, oh yeah, total eye candy. Transcendence, which I also heard was garbage.
Yeah.
That was a shame because that's based off a Philip K. Dick story, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they had Johnny Depp in there, and it did have a lot of potential, but then again, a little too afraid of getting into the P.K. Dick world too deep, you know, and maybe that'll affect our ticket sales because it was not the same dark twist that, you know, the film.
Nobody wants to really delve too deep into it or give it the amount of weight or justice that it really kind of deserves. And I haven't read all of Philip K. Dick's stuff, and I'm not a fan of some of his stuff that he's written. But what I have read is really kind of can be very dark and twisted. And of course that, you know, he was a schizophrenic.
And a drug user.
Reality is a basic concept of all his work.
Yeah.
He's always quest what reality
exactly.
was.
Exactly. And, you know, there are very few exceptions of somebody doing a Philip K. Dick story, short story, whatever, and having it be successful. I think the only one really is Blade Runner, and even Blade Runner is not, you know, Droids Dream of Electric Sheep.
Yeah.
It's completely different.
Yeah. It's still a fantastic film. But I would say there's another one I can think of. Older one in the 80s. It was called, was it Screamers? And it had, I think it was Peter Weller starring in it. There had been a war between humans and another race, but they had, like, planted these nasty little self-replicating machines that would just tear you into a million pieces all over the place. And they were, like, you know, like stealth. And that was also a very good one.
Hmm.
Oh, guess what? Now that we're almost done, Sal decided to show up.
Mm-hmm.
So, take a seat, Sal, and introduce yourself.
Hey, guys, I'm Sal.
Hey, Sal.
Hey, Sal.
Hey.
Welcome aboard.
And Sal does graphics work and other stuff for us.
Nice.
Cool.
Well, Sal, feel free to jump in whenever you want. We're just kind of running through our stories here. We're running through the top 10 best and worst movies, and Matt, you're down to number one. The worst movie of 2014, what is it?
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Steaming Pile of Dog.
Yeah.
That movie was so bad. I acquired it via the internet and was still upset.
You got it for free and you still didn't like it.
You want your non-paid money back.
I was playing
He wanted
video
his
games.
Life back.
I was playing video games while I watched it, and I still could not handle it.
Wow.
I don't even think I finished it.
And yet people went to see it, and it made a lot of money. That's sad.
People are dumb.
It's the nostalgia factor, and they want to see if whether or not it would probably be screwed up, which it was from what
Very
I hear.
Much.
I didn't actually watch it, so...
What's her face from the original actress from Transformers was in...
Megan Fox.
Yeah, she was in Teenage Mutant Ninja
With the
Turtles.
Thumbs.
Yeah.
I will say that I kind of like Megan Fox in that she's totally down with the aliens and believes that they exist and is into the whole conspiracy thing and Bigfoot. And I'm like, you know, it's... I don't know. I kind of like that about her. And she's not afraid to say it's... to say it, so.
Wackadoodles are fun.
Yeah, it's like, I like her quirky opinion on things, so.
She's an interesting person.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt. That was a great list. And we'll have the link to the complete article in the show notes of the podcast, so you can check them out for yourself. Brad, you're next in the lineup. What do you got for us?
So, Star Wars, the J.J. Abrams team has revealed in probably one of the coolest ways you could, and it's mostly cool because I know Dave and I grew up at the same time, around the same time, and they had Star Wars collectible trading cards.
And I
one
had
of the,
some
of the earliest and more popular non-sport trading cards.
I had some, and I got rid of them a long time ago. I'm so mad.
Yeah.
I had the cards and I had the comic books.
Don't worry
books.
About it. They're still not worth very much, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. That makes me feel that makes
you
me feel
be
better.
Less fat now, Dave.
But the interesting thing is the way they went about releasing the names of the characters, and by that I mean we saw a number of individuals in the trailer. And by individuals, you know, the robot that was on the soccer ball and the person with the horrible idea for a lightsaber and the black stormtrooper that some people were up in arms about because he's not a clone. And it's like, well, no, he's not a clone. And suck it. Shut up.
Doesn't that make it interesting, though? Wait, he's not a clone. That's
exactly.
Interesting.
Well, the other thing, too, is by the time we get to A New Hope, they're actively recruiting people. Yeah. So the whole clone well dried up at some point. That's canon, and people need to calm the hell down. So we had all these things going on. People were clamoring for details, and true to form, J.J. Abrams is finding great ways to release details about the film. And by God, if he didn't marry the look of the original Topps trading cards, they had the licensing rights to do the cards. And that's what they did to release the names of these characters. The names of the characters that we have now are... the soccer ball robot is BB-8. The gentleman the gentleman in the X-wing fighter with the I don't know if you guys saw the article with the in the image, people were analyzing it and they had translated what was written on his on a portion of his costume, and it said "pull to inflate." So in that X-Wing fighter, if he were to go aquatic or whatever, he could pull to inflate, and he's got a flotation device on his chest. Kylo Ren is the name of the person with the jacked-up lightsaber. The woman on the ice cream sandwich that flies over the desert, her name is Rey. And Finn on the Run, Finn is the... Hang on a second.
He's the stormtrooper, or supposed the guy in the stormtrooper outfit.
Finn is the black stormtrooper that everybody was freaked out about. So there you go. Those are the names of the characters that we now have. If you go to the show notes, we'll have the link to the Entertainment Weekly article. They actually did it in a fashion where they looked completely in the style of the cards, the Topps trading cards from the time period, and it's just... They're doing such an amazing PR job themselves from the CG crap fest that was episodes 1 through 3. He's kind of building it up to a point where this movie had better not suck. Because if it does, there's going to be health. Exactly.
I believe in JJ.
You believe.
Hey, it's Dave. As you could probably tell, we had some internet connectivity issues while recording this episode. And at that point, that's where everything pretty much crashed. There were two more stories that Anessa and I had that you'll just have to wait to hear about next time. Speaking of that, we are taking a couple of weeks off for the holidays and the new year. So the next Sci-Fi Geeks Club that you will get will be in the second week of January. But I encourage you to go back and listen to past episodes if you can and experience all over again the first year of this little podcast of ours. I'd like to thank both Captain Zant and Sal Carbajal for joining us on this episode. You can find out what they have going on by visiting their website, which is warpedspacesci-fi.com. That's warpedspacesci-fi.com for sci-fi news, posts, blogs, reviews, and links to many indie sci-fi projects, including films, fan series, shorts, conventions, and a whole lot more. And please visit our website, too, galacticnetcasts.com, where you can get links to our shows, our social networks. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, posting all kinds of cool stuff all the time, plus Pinterest and YouTube. We have a subscription page, and speaking of that, on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio, just search for Sci-Fi Geeks Club or Galactic Netcasts. And if you could, it would also be great if you could leave a positive review and throw a 5-star rating our way as well. Thank you. That is it for another presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. I call this meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club adjourned for 2014. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a happy holiday. You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.